You're watching Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast. This is episode number 36. Hi everyone, and thanks again for watching this episode of Tim Topham TV. It is great to have you along wherever you are, in the car, on my website, on YouTube, at the beach, riding your bike, whatever it is, listening to me or watching. Thank you very much for tuning in. Today we're going to be continuing our series about examination boards, and this time we're going to be talking to the AMEB Federal Office General Manager, Bernard DePasquale. Now, before we dive in, I do want to thank today's sponsor, and this is the last opportunity you're going to get to grab Group Lessons 101 from Tracy Selly and Sarah Campbell. You've heard me talking about it all month on the podcast. If you haven't got in there, this is your last chance. The 10% off deal that I'm offering is running out at the end of this month. I'm hungry, obviously. Month of March. Now, guys, just in case you didn't catch the last couple of mentions of this, Group Lessons 101 is the latest series of webinars and online training from Tracy and Sarah. These guys have put together an awesome package for anyone who is interested in putting together group games, summer camps, group lesson ideas, or changing their studio around to teaching groups, maybe a few groups, maybe only groups, whatever it is. If it's to do with group teaching and piano, this is the course that you need to get hold of. And these guys have put together PDFs, worksheets, videos of them teaching. The course is great. I've been in there. I've had a look at it. I've actually learned a whole heap myself because I need some help with this stuff as much as everyone else does. So get in there, grab the discount while it lasts. It's 10% off access. You'll only get that through Tim Topham TV. And to find out more, head to timtopham.com/upbeat. That's UPBEAT, timtopham.com/upbeat. Now, today's show notes will be as usual at timtopham.com/episode36. And something I haven't asked you guys to do for a little while, but I do want to put in a reminder for it. iTunes reviews are really, really important for anyone running a podcast, because the more reviews you get that are positive, the more you can rank highly in searches. So I would love for you, please, if you're listening to these and you're getting stuff out of it, rather than email me — I love the emails I'm getting, thank you so much, don't get me wrong — but if you can leave an iTunes review, that would be so good. I would really, really appreciate it. And if you want to know how, it only takes like 3 minutes, head to timtopham.com/iTunes. Okay, now this, I mentioned, is a series on exam boards. So I just wanted to recap. In episode 16, we talked about ANSCA, the Australian New Zealand Cultural Arts exam board. ABRSM we talked about in episode 17. And Royal College of Music, RCM exams, Royal Conservatory of Music, RCM exams in episode 31. So if you haven't listened to those and they are of use or interest to you, then make sure you check back to those episodes 16, 17, and 31. In this episode, I'm talking with the General Manager of the Federal Office of the Australian Music Examination Board. So this is Australia's largest examining body, about how their exam works, how their exams work, and about a number of new initiatives that the AMEB has been developing online in the last few years and some of their plans for the future. So this is Bernard DePasquale. Thank you very much for watching, and I hope you enjoy. Well, g'day, Bernard. Thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, look, it's great to have you here, because for those international listeners and viewers, they may not be so aware of the AMEB, but for anyone living in Australia who's a music teacher, everyone knows about it, because you guys are by far the biggest music examination board. So absolutely really important to have you guys on as part of my exam series. So can you give us just a little brief background in your own kind of musical story and how you've come to be involved in the AMEB?
Sure. So I did music at school, did a music degree in Adelaide. I'm from Adelaide originally, so the Elder Conservatorium. And then eventually my wife plays violin, and we performed together for many years professionally as the Tea Rose Duo. So I primarily come from a performing background. Then
what was the Tea Rose? How did that come about?
We were playing together, and we just were playing for some afternoon teas at a winery in McLaren Vale called Middlebrook Winery, and the guy running that was quite entrepreneurial, wanted to advertise it, and he said, "What's your name?" And we didn't really have a name, we just played together, and and it was afternoon teas, and we like Sarah Likes Roses, Tea Rose Duo just came from that and stuck with us.
I love the McLaren Vale, by the way.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world. So from performing, I actually was offered a job at the Melba Conservatorium of Music in Melbourne about 15 years ago, and I came over here for that. We were sort of, our kids had just finished school. We were ready for a bit of a life change, and so I stopped being a musician, got a real job, and that was good. But Melba closed down as a teaching institution. It's now a opera trust that is gives scholarships to students studying opera, and sort of at that time I got the job at the AMUB as general manager of federal office, and that's where I've been for the last 8 or so years.
Right. And so just to clarify, so there's a federal office of which you oversee, and there's a number of staff there, and then each state of Australia or a number of states have their own independent or kind of semi-independent.
Yeah, that's right. It's a federated structure like our government system, so it's it has its own challenges, but each state, including Victoria, which is where the federal office is based, has its own office that does the examining, and they're, to most intents and purposes, independent of the federal office. So federal office is responsible for publications, curriculum, syllabuses, all that side of it. So,
But the states can, there's obviously differences, because I know speaking to other people in different states, there's different differences in how they run and coordinate and things like that.
Absolutely.
And that's just part of the structure.
That's part of the structure.
So I was really interested when I interviewed Tim at the ABRSM for the interview that we did over there. He was talking about the fact that the AMEB actually came out of the ABRSM structure or was based on it or something. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, look, I don't know a huge amount about it. I know that when AMEB has been around a long time, almost as long as ABRSM, but... So it started off at University of Melbourne and Adelaide in 1877, but we're just about in 2018, we celebrate our 100th anniversary as a national organisation. So we're getting geared up for some good celebrations around that. But I think it started out as an import. It basically was modelled on the ABRSM, and in those days a lot of the music teachers who were working here in Australia came out from England, you know, and there was a gentleman's agreement that because it had been set up by ABRSM that they wouldn't examine here. So clearly at some point along the way that gentleman's agreement got lost, because ABRSM are here, but that's not something we mind. I think it's good to have them around along with all the other exam boards. So,
great. And so, what are the main goals of the AMEB?
AMEB is set up to support music education in Australia, so that's its main goal. I think that. I think coming up for our 100th anniversary is a really good time to reflect on that. And so, I mean, that's obviously what we do. And at the time, sort of taking on that exam structure, providing syllabus for teachers, that was seen as, you know, a good way to support our music. And it obviously has been. It's been around for a long time. It's used a lot. It's an important part of how most people learn music in Australia. So, but I think as we now move into our next 100 years that there's probably some things that we need to change about what we do. And I think offering a high level of examination is always going to be a really important part of what AMEB does, but I don't think it should be the only part of what AMEB does. So we're really sort of trying to spread into other areas, supporting music education where for disadvantaged kids, you know, kids who can't necessarily access AMEB in its current form, because as you probably know, one of the most common complaints we get, oh, you know, everything's really expensive, and that's fair enough.
I didn't know that was a common complaint. But anyway.
You know, yeah. But And there are people who can't afford that. So we'd like to be able to help those people, helping teachers with their teaching, so offering more in terms of professional development and so on, support for teachers, I think is quite important. So you know, I think you'll see over coming years just a few differences in the breadth of what AMUB is offering the musical community.
Mm. And there's certainly been, I think in the last, five years, the AMUB seems to have taken on a whole lot of different things in regard to the online world in particular, the online exams and things, which we can talk about later on.
Yeah.
There definitely seems to be a movement in that, you know, a new direction.
Look, I think that's true. I think AMUB has, there's a bit of perception that it's a organisation that's stuck in the past, and, you know, that's something that we've been trying to change. Certainly in my time here, I've been keen to try and change that. And the current board of AMUB is very positive, engaged and keen to move the organisation forward. So we've got a pretty good setup at the moment.
Mm. And it's so, great to hear that one of the things that you'll be focusing on is more professional development. I mean, there's no, almost no better way to support music education than to support the teachers who provide it, I guess. So
I think so, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so what do you think are the main features that separate the AMEB from some of the other exam boards? Because there's probably 5-6 so options in Australia, I guess. Can you pick out just a couple of things that you'd go, yeah, that's why we kind of, where we're different?
I think probably the biggest difference is just having the Australian in our name, and, you know, we represent that. So when we put together a syllabus, we use the best Australian specialists in that pedagogical area. We try and include a lot of Australian composers, and we're obviously the only exam board that's probably really pushing to include Australian composers. So, you know, it's the, in a sense, the Australian-centric nature of what we do. And I think teachers generally appreciate that, you know, people like to have something that's developed in their own backyard. So that's obviously an important point of difference. There are a lot of minor differences between, you know, us and ABRSM, but in the end, I don't think there's a huge, you know, if somebody's doing ABRSM, somebody's doing AMUB, they're largely doing the same thing. They're largely learning in the same way, I would suspect, you know.
Yep. Mm. Okay, so what type of piano exams are actually offered at the moment? So looking specifically at piano now.
Yep, sure. So, I mean, there's really the, if you like, the traditional piano syllabus and then piano for leisure syllabus. So they're the two. Traditional piano is more classically based, has more technical work, more pieces are required, so it's a slightly more substantial examination that's required. Piano for leisure is deliberately intended to have a slightly lighter workload. You want to do 3 pieces in the higher grades instead of 4, less technical work. You can choose in the section 3 whether you do oral tests or sight reading, so there's just a little bit less work and preparation involved, and the repertoire in piano for leisure is much more oriented towards popular repertoire, whether that's popular classics or, you know, a lot more contemporary music. So,
but as I've come to learn, not necessarily any easier though.
No, it's not. It's not easier, and, you know, we get some interesting, when we're doing new syllabuses or new books, you know, even recently with our Series 17, that's the most current series of books with our traditional classical syllabus. I think one of the pieces that they selected was actually already in the piano for leisure syllabus, and the grade that they put it in for the new syllabus, or they were looking at putting it in, was actually higher. So it was something like, you know, they were going to put it in at grade 7 and it's sitting in piano for leisure at grade 6. So, you know, obviously these gradings are slightly subjective, but nonetheless they're pretty much the same standard in terms of the performance and so on.
Mm. Mm. Now, I noticed that you recently announced an agreement with Rock School, which I thought was really interesting, but I wasn't too sure how it actually works. So can you explain that a bit more?
Sure.
It sounds cool, if nothing else.
Yeah. We are pretty excited about this. So Rock School is a UK exam board that has a really good reputation for putting out contemporary rock and pop syllabuses. Amy B has a contemporary popular music syllabus, which is called just that, CPM, stands for Contemporary Popular Music. It came out about 10, 12 years ago. It's not been refreshed since then. There were probably some errors made in when it was put together in terms of choices of repertoire, and some things have become quite stale quite quickly. But we were looking at refreshing that area of our syllabuses, and then Rock School approached us and said they'd be interested in us delivering their syllabuses. We got some of our specialists in that area to look at their syllabuses, very complimentary about that, the resources, the books that come out, the recordings. Everything's of a very high standard. And so we thought, you know, we just wanted to have a go at, you know, rather than reinventing the wheel and just having another, you know, syllabus, why not use one that we know is good and deliver that? So that's an experiment. We're in a sort of trial period with Rock School for 3 years just to see how it goes. And then, you know, we each have the opportunity to walk away at that point if it's not working out for us. But we're expecting it to work well, and then we probably move into a sort of longer-term relationship with them to continue that.
And is there a piano component or a keyboard?
There's actually just since we made that announcement, they've released a new piano syllabus, and you know it has some really great material in it. So they're very good syllabuses. Yeah.
Okay. So there'll actually, for piano teachers, there'll be three piano-based exams: piano for leisure, piano and rock.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
And yeah. So you can be examined. That starts this year, does it?
Yeah, that starts this year.
Okay. And so we'll talk more about resources, but just on the Rock School, does it go by, do you need to grab a book? Is there a grade level series of books?
Very similar to Amy B. So there's grade books. They have additional resources. So they have quite an element of free choice in their exams, so you can use the grade books for that. They have additional repertoire books, or you can use your own repertoire if it's the appropriate standard. But so there's quite a lot of repertoire books, yeah. You know, all the usual sorts of things that you'd see.
And so it's going to be good for students who like playing the pop, more the pop style, or playing from lead sheets, improvising, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's cool. I'll definitely have some students who are in that category. I'll have to look into it.
Yeah.
What I'll do is I'll find the link. I assume you've got information on your website. I'll pop that in the show notes for today so people can find it.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Great. Is the CPM your old syllabus? Is that actually still offered, or is it?
Yeah. So it's still being offered, and we'll give, as we do with all our syllabuses, 24 months notice of it being withdrawn, and then an official 12-month notice in the manual the year before. But that won't happen. The earliest that will happen is the end of this year. We'll give 24 months notice. So it'll be around for a few years. So people who have been using it, they'll still be able to use it. They might want to think about transferring to Rock School, because it's, you know, I think I can say without being offensive to ourselves that it's probably a better syllabus. It's got more current repertoire and, you know,
it's always going to be a
step up, move on.
With the popular music, isn't it? You've got to keep it current and fresh. It's hard. As teachers, it's hard to keep up.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, one of the things, I went to a Rock School workshop the other day, and apparently what kids are wanting to play now in their lessons, and you probably know this because you're teaching more than me, but their video game music, you know, I want to play that song from my video game, and I think, wow, that's... For me, I stopped teaching 20 years ago, but nobody's asked me about that. But, you know, that's...
Yeah, no, that's very true.
You've got to keep moving with the times, don't you?
Absolutely. I had a student just yesterday come in, and that's all he wants to play is video game music. And luckily there's some great stuff out there, but it can be hard to find. You have to wade through a lot of bad arrangements.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Now, you also recently released the music theatre syllabus. I had a couple of teachers ask whether there was a piano component or if that's just a vocal thing.
It's aimed at vocal, so but both in terms of repertoire and style, it's specifically musical theatre. So it is different from all the singing, because we do have a classical singing syllabus. We have a singing for leisure syllabus, but this will be different again. And you know, the examination will be on the as much as the singing voice as the delivery of the song, the acting, within the song, you know, all that sort of thing will be much more important than in a sort of traditional classical where you're really just looking at the quality of the voice. That's important as well, of course, but, you know, different emphasis. And so
there's a lot of talk around about it. It's certainly seen as a very positive move, so it's well done.
Thank you. Yeah, we really thought there's a good market for it, and all the early response has been very positive, so we're happy.
Yeah, that's great. All right, so where in the world can students be examined, or is this just Australia for now?
Look, with our practical exams, it's just Australia. With our online written exams, theoretically from anywhere in the world, so it's a little bit different. But, yeah, with our practical exams at the moment, we'll just examine in Australia.
All right, so let's talk just briefly about the online exams. I actually think this is a huge step forward. This is just theory, obviously, for people that aren't familiar with it, but at least I think so. I shouldn't take words out of your mouth. Online theory exams, I think this was a real game changer for music education in Australia. Can you tell us a little bit about how that works?
Yeah, so you can, with any of our theory syllabuses, you can do your exam up to grade 6 online. So you buy the exam, the cost is just the same as a traditional theory exam. You have the license for 12 months and then you can practice, you can get used to the technology. There are practice exams and practice questions that you can do as much as you like. And then when you're ready to do your real exam, if you're a child, you need to be supervised by an adult. So, but they log in, sign off as a supervisor. You do your exam, you have the same time limit that you do for a traditional exam, and then depending on the grade, up to grade 3 in theory of music, it's marked automatically. You get your results immediately. Then grade 4 and above in theory of music is marked by a marker, and we have a panel of markers who log in and mark, and those results get sent to you normally within 2 or 3 days, so it's still pretty quick.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. I'm sure there's people out there thinking, now, if this is online, why on earth isn't it cheaper? You don't have to hire a venue. You don't have to hire invigilators.
Yeah, that's true. There's two issues for us with that, I suppose. And ultimately, that might be the case. What's happening, it's you can imagine it's been quite expensive to develop, and that's an ongoing cost. And even now, we're having to move the platform from the current platform to HTML5, which is the new, you know, standard ubiquitous version for online products like that. So, you know, there's constant cost involved in that. And plus, we're really running a dual delivery system and have been since we started online. So states are still offering their traditional version. That's down to 1 year now, so one session a year, so in August. But because the numbers of those are falling, the costs of running those exams is static. And so, but ultimately, I think, you know, given a period of time, all the exams will move online, and it might be a good question to ask then. You know?
Okay, yeah. So you've obviously seen a good uptake in people using these exams.
Yeah, look, it's really strong. I think I was looking last year, I think almost 2/3 of our candidates have moved online now. So 1/3 using the traditional, and that's obviously been on one of those, you know, upwards scale, so increasing. So we'd expect that to keep increasing, you know, even over the coming years, where the vast majority of people are just doing them online.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And even more recently, I think you released some courses to teach students how to be successful in those exams. Is that right?
Yeah, so we're finding them harder to develop and release, but we've got grade 1 theory of music, grade 2 theory of music. We're just working on grade 3 theory of music, and that will be released in the next few months. So that's a course for anyone, adult or child, to learn all those rudiments that they need to learn for the actual exam. So
is it designed to be used with a teacher, or literally step by step, you can do it all online?
You can do it all online. If you're probably for a younger student, they'd need a teacher or a parent or somebody, you know, supervising them. But for an older student or an adult, they could just, you know, completely self-sufficient.
It must be a fantastic resource for those in remote areas too, I would have thought. Both of these.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, the flexibility and convenience of online exams is teachers in particular love it. Parents in particular love it. We really found the take-up of online exams was teachers tended to drag their heels a little bit. Some teachers a bit more forward-thinking, yeah, this is great, but parents said, actually, this means I don't have to take a day off work, drive into town, drop my child off, pick them up. They can actually do it at a time that suits us, and they voted with their feet, you know. Mm. That makes sense to me. That's the world we live in now, you know. Just things are changing, and we have to change with that, you know.
That's right. Well, it's great to say that you're leading that charge. I think it's fantastic. So going back to the practical sessions, there's about 5 opportunities to be examined during the year. Have I got that right?
Yeah, it varies a little bit from state to state, but pretty much from March through to December, there's sessions, and depending when you're ready for it, you can, you know, within reason, do an exam. Pretty much any time that suits you.
All right. So let's talk about the examiners now, because I think one of the hardest things for any exam board must be to ensure that there's standardized testing going on in all the exams. So how does the AMEB go about ensuring that standardization in their examiners?
Yeah, so I think that is one of the things. So, you know, we have annual training days and workshops for examiners where we get the examiners together. They'll have a live exam and they'll all mark it together and then talk about it together so they can get that sort of feedback of what you're doing. We'll try and moderate some of the examiners over time. So, and obviously when examiners are new, they're in probation and they get more supervision and more, you know, and as examiners get more experience, they get more autonomy probably. But yeah, it's a constant I don't want to say battle, it's a constant thing, challenge. Just to keep working on, because it's something that the people who use the system are very conscious of, you know. If they feel they're not getting an equal result, then, you know, even if that's just a perception of theirs, and it's still important that it's addressed and that they feel like there is that standardisation.
Mm. Oh, it's absolutely, it's crucial in my opinion.
Yeah.
Really interesting, I've got a friend who marks English papers at year 12, our VCE level, and I'm pretty sure out of every 10 or 20 papers they get, one of them has to go and get cross-marked with someone else to make sure they're, you know, keeping on the right schedule. Is there something like that that you could do or do already do? I don't know if it's possible, but it's just a thought.
It's obviously difficult with an exam because it's a live experience, and even though somebody else can look at the report, they obviously can't look at it in context of having seen the student that the report was written for. So there's...
Videoed, I guess.
I guess that's possible. It's not something we do now, but we certainly keep strong statistical evidence of what everybody's doing, and if anybody appears to be off the curve of where they should be, then something will be, you know, we'll then send a more experienced examiner in as a moderator just to see what's going on. Yeah. Sometimes that statistical thing can be just that, you know, somebody goes to examine at a school where everyone's really well prepared, and, you know, no doubt your school is like that, and, you know, you suddenly get dozens or hundreds of A's and it looks weird and you think, gee, that examiner's just gone soft. But, you know, that can happen. And that's the sort of thing that needs to be looked at, you know. But we, as soon as somebody gets out of what would be a normal statistical curve, that's just another way of keeping track of people that they're, you know. So it's a balancing act, because anything that you do, I mean, we can have 2 examiners at every exam, but then people have to pay twice as much, and, you know, there's a cost to doing all that stuff, and so you've got to try and balance the cost against what you're trying to achieve.
Mm, I understand.
But videoing some of the exams and cross-examining them is actually an interesting idea. So
I get look, and I'm by no means, I don't run exam boards or anything, but I'm just picking up, you know, things from my other interviews, I guess.
Yeah.
An interesting thought. I'm also interested too, yours, the AMEB is the only board that I've interviewed that doesn't do a numerical marking system. And I'm interested to know if that's something that has been discussed before or you're interested in, or you've made a conscious decision to stick to an ABCD grading.
Look, it's a sort of thing, that current grading system was established before my time here, but I know it had a lot of discussion, and I know it's always about what's the most current pedagogical thinking, and it has been in place for a fair while. I anticipated you asking that question, and I was just having a bit of a look around at different examination systems, and they do change. You know, oddly enough, I found the examination system, a history of examination systems for schools in Denmark, you know, and they've sort of over the 20th century, they've gone from having five different grades to seven to 13 to back to six. And, you know, now they're back to seven now. So, you know, obviously that sort of thinking changes quite a lot, and it might be something that we should look at. What I think doesn't change is the end result. Like, if you're marking percentages or numbers against grades, the two systems would come up with the same result, I think. And so, so I know parents like to see, you know, you only got 3 out of 10 for your scales, and therefore that's why you only got a B instead of an A. But equally, in an AMEB exam, you'd see a lot of crosses in the scale section if somebody only got, you know, 3 out of 10, if that's what it was. And in the comments at that point, and then in the general comments down the bottom, if everything else was really good, it would say something like, you know, Jane played her pieces really beautifully, but unfortunately her technical work wasn't well prepared. And, you know, it would be quite clear where something like that. And so I think at the time the system was set, there was a bit of a philosophical pedagogical thing about saying, you know, should you be measuring music in that specific numbers way? Is that student played that Bach piece and that was worth 5 out of 6, you know, as opposed to saying that student played beautifully and they got an A, you know. It's
I can see both sides of the argument. I guess, yeah, from a teacher's perspective and playing devil's advocate a bit, I guess it's quite handy. You mentioned the parents sort of saying, you know, I can see my child's got 3 out of 10 for the sight reading or whatever it is. I think it's also quite useful for the teacher too, because it's very, you can see the crosses, obviously, but it's quite transparent, I guess, is another word. And so the teacher could look at that report and go, oh, yeah, I can see exactly, and that makes sense. I knew that was going to happen, or, well, I'm really surprised. Or, you know, I guess that would be my take on it.
Yeah. I think it's something we could probably look at again. I don't know. It may be the thinking has changed, you know.
Mm.
So as it does over time with all these things, you know, swings and roundabouts. So, I mean, we have the advantage of having, you know, easy access to some of the best academic thinking on all of these subjects. And so perhaps it's time we open that up again for another conversation and see what people say now. Might be, you know, back to numbers.
There you go. Okay, so what supplementary exams are involved when you sit your practical test? You're obviously playing some pieces. For those that don't know, what else has to happen in those exams?
So within the exam, the practical exam, you mean, so pieces, technical work. Reading. Yeah.
Yep.
So we talk about section 1, 2, and 3. Section 1 is technical work. Section 2 is pieces. Section 3 is the bit that all teachers, students hate, which is, you know, general knowledge, sight reading, oral tests. That whole section 3 thing is interesting because it's such an important part of a student's development that they do these things. And so that's why it sits in the exam, because it's acknowledged that people should be able to do this. It should be as much a part of their teaching and their practice and their lessons as learning pieces and learning scales is, you know. But unfortunately, it tends to get treated as a little add-on. And so, you know, a few weeks before the exam, a lot of teachers will say, oh, you're going to have to do sight reading. You know, here's a book. practice this, you're going to have to do oral tests. And it become, for the students who are prepared in that way, especially as they get to higher levels, it becomes, you know, a problematic thing for them, and they really hate it. And it's really just about preparation. It, you know, a student should be able to sight read, should be able to sing, should have a knowledge. You know, a teacher should be talking to a student all the time about where does this piece come from, what sort of, you know, is it a dance, is it a, you know, that. And the sort of things that get written in the book the week before the exam, you know, MF means mezzo forte, means moderately loud, should be talked about from the first lesson, you know. And so that's a sort of frustration, I think, just for me personally, that that section gets treated in the way it does, because treated properly, it becomes an important part of the child's learning, and that sort of testing just becomes a complete, you know, water off a duck's back for a student who's been doing it every week, you know.
There's no doubt that you are 100% correct. And being an accompanist, I've experienced many times those times when teachers go, "Oh, you'll do the oral test, you know, practice, won't you, with my student." I hope people listening who do use your syllabus take that on board, because it is so important, particularly sight reading. I put that up so highly in everything that I teach. It is just a crucial skill.
And that's why exam boards all have it. You know, I don't think any exam boards don't have some equivalent version of section 3, you know, and because it's such an important part of learning music or understanding the music and, you know, listening to it and all that stuff.
And if you're teaching holistically, then hopefully it shouldn't be a problem, as you say.
Yeah, you know, and I get the time issue, you know, there's only so much, you know, I understand all that. So, and, you know, I know it can be hard to fit that in, but discipline.
That's right. And look, those people watching who do find it hard, I interviewed Paul Harris from the UK, who's the kind of creator or the person that's well known for simultaneous learning, this concept of teaching as many things as you can at once as you develop a piece, rather than pigeonholing, okay, now we're going to play our pieces, okay, now we're going to do our sight reading, making it all much more holistic. So people interested, I'll pop a link in the show notes to episode 9 of this podcast with Paul Harris. That's great for those people who are really struggling to fit everything in. He's got a different view on it all.
That's great.
Okay, so now theory requirements. A lot of boards require you to do set grade theory to pass a particular exam. What's the requirement for Amy B?
I think our requirements kick in at grade 6 practical. You need to have grade 2 theory to get your certificate, and then each grade above that. So grade 7, you need grade 3, grade 8, grade 4, and so on. So that's a variation of what we've just been talking about, that, you know, expectation that if you're doing grade 8 practical, you should have a knowledge of theory, you know, that matches that, and if you don't, then you're probably missing out on something. And so while it's a sort of, it could be seen as we're forcing you to do something to get your practical certificate, we're really just saying this is the minimum you should be in this area of music if you're doing this area of practical. You know, it all ties in. It's not a, you know, holistic learning. It all ties together. It's important.
Okay, and just on to books. So you sell grade books for each of the different syllabi. How long do they normally last? How long can you use them in your studio before you have to buy new ones? Some of your grade boards change every couple of years.
Yeah, it would be rare for us that a grade book wouldn't last 10 years from the time it's introduced. Our different philosophies on developing syllabuses, actually that is something when you asked me before what's different about AME B, you know, ABRSM have quite compact syllabuses and they change them quite regularly. You know, our piano syllabus goes on for weeks and practically every piece ever written is in there somewhere. And, you know, so we have much larger syllabuses with a lot of manual list choices and therefore we keep our syllabuses current in a sense for much longer because they have so much more choice in them. So really, once we release a set of grade books with a syllabus, then they're going to be current until that syllabus is changed. And usually those syllabuses aren't changed for, you know, 8 to 10 years would be normally the smallest time we would have, and some syllabuses have been around for longer than that.
Right. And look, and people listening who perhaps might be more familiar with ABRSM or Trinity might gasp at the fact that, you know, you're keeping books for 10 years. But I think you're right. I actually made a note to bring up your manual list. The AMEB has the most extensive list that I've found of any exam board so far of pieces that you can choose to perform for each sort of section, your bureauc or your studies or whatever it is, that you don't need to buy in a particular book or edition. As long as it's the right piece of music, you can use it. And I think that is a huge point of difference.
So with piano, because it is such a popular syllabus, it's the only syllabus where we would normally release a new set of grade books within the life of a syllabus. So Series 17 came out the end of the year before last, and that's the syllabus didn't change. It was just a new set of grade books because and then we'll start work on a new piano syllabus either this year or next year, probably for release in 2018. So there's a
and there's a crossover, isn't there? There's a fair bit of time when
absolutely the old ones as well. Series 17, those grade books will probably transfer to the new syllabus, would be my guess, but that's not my decision. But but so, you know, they'll have been in life for 5 years by then, and they'll probably get another 5 or 10 years life. The previous Series 16 will probably drop off, but, you know, that's been around for 10 years. So, you know, it's so they get a good life, and, you know, you can use them again, pass them on to other people. We'd encourage all that sort of thing to happen. So,
great.
And that's a special, what is that, advanced news for you, that we'll start working on a new piano syllabus soon.
I thought that might be the first time I've heard of that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Saw it and heard it first on
Please.
Now let's just talk about diploma exams. What diplomas do you offer? Because that's obviously quite an important recognised standard for a lot of students around the world getting their diploma.
So Associate of Music, AMAS A, and Licentiate of Music, the LMAS, are offered in almost all of our syllabuses. So we currently have a fellowship, but that's actually being withdrawn. So so from, I think there'll be 24 months that's around for. So if somebody's thinking of really wanting to do their fellowship of music, better get cranking.
Yeah. Why are they withdrawing that? Out of interest.
It's, I don't think it's really met the need that it was designed for. Mm-hmm. So it will remain as an honorary qualification that AMEB will bestow on people who have given great service over the years, but it was really designed to be a concert level qualification. But and so the sort of people who would be able to successfully complete a fellowship probably aren't going to sit for it, because they'll be have a busy concert career and won't be thinking, I really need my AMEB fellowship. But a lot of people who just go through the AMEB grades, AMAS, LMAS, oh, I'll do FMAS now, and it's not really intended for that. And so there's quite a high fail level, and I don't think that that's very helpful for anyone, you know. It's, and so, so yeah, after a bit of thought, the board decided last year just to remove it and make it an honorary only qualification.
Which brings it in line with what fellowships are at many other organisations. So it's more an honorary, something that's given, I guess, yeah. Okay, so just to the last few questions, I guess. Do you have, you're obviously very proactive with the online courses and things, do you have online enrolment, results or syllabuses? They're my next 3 points.
All the syllabuses available now is just digital downloads, and we're working on something a little bit more advanced for that, hoping next year it might be more like an app version of something, you know, so but so that's in the pipeline. Online enrolments are a state thing, and so it varies a bit from state to state, but certainly all the bigger states, Victoria, New South Wales, Queensland, I think Victoria, either have or are about to have online enrollments. So it depends where you live. which is the nature of a federated structure. We don't have control over that. But so the level of online access just depends on the state that you're in. So New South Wales have had online, they have a thing called Online Connect, and Victoria use the same system that New South Wales do. And so I think that if they haven't already got it operating, they intend to soon.
Right, that's for results, isn't it?
Yeah, so you get results, enter online, pay for exam online.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested to hear about that. I didn't realise about the federated structure, although now you mentioned the federal office, it makes sense. Is that just, I mean, it doesn't sound like the normal kind of structure for an organisation of this type. Is that just something historical that...
Yeah, so it was the normal structure when AMEB was initially structured. So, but I think that's definitely something that, you know, I'd come back to the 100-year anniversary just because something was made sense 100 years ago doesn't necessarily mean it makes sense now, you know. I think some sort of national structure would be very beneficial for AMEB.
Keep consistency and things like that. I certainly know on, you know, Facebook discussion groups, some people in New South Wales will say this about their thing, and the Melbourne guys will pipe up and say, "Oh, we've got this," and all that. But yeah, it sounds like it would make it much easier if it was standardised.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. Now, one of the last things I guess I wanted to ask, just a couple of questions, for teachers considering a change of exam board. So let's say there's some teachers watching who are currently using ANSCA, who I interviewed in an earlier episode, but have listened to this and gone, well, yeah, actually, it sounds like a really good system. I'm interested in changing. What kind of advice would you give to teachers who are considering a change? How should they go about it? And then where would they find that information and that sort of thing?
Look, a combination of things. I think just getting hold of a syllabus and just having a look at that, the requirements, the sort of materials that are available and so on would be helpful for someone just to give a bit of a sense of how it all works. Probably talking to your state office just about when the exam sessions are, how much does it cost, because you're probably going to want to compare all that sort of thing to what you have now, and is it going to be as good or better or, you know, similar. So definitely talk to your state office. Some state offices run workshops just in, introduction to AMEB, and if there's something like that, obviously that's a great chance just to get a bit of a head start on what's going on. But state offices are generally very welcoming, and, you know, they want new teachers. They want teachers to transfer over, so if you just ring up with a question... Federal office is very welcoming too, you know, but a lot of the questions that teachers have tend to be more about some of the practical logistical things that state offices deal with rather than, but, you know, if you've got questions about syllabuses or more general philosophical questions about teaching, you're welcome to give us a call and someone will chat with you about it, you know.
Great.
No problem.
Fantastic. All right. And so what are some, apart from the syllabus, have you got other apps or resources that you would recommend for new teachers?
The one thing that we have started or in the process of doing is producing recorded accompaniments for all of our instrumental syllabuses up to grade 3. And they're both for use as practice but also use in the exam room. They were not uncontroversial when it was announced, and I know you might have seen some of the...
That was an understatement. I was going to ask about it because I again think it's actually a really... And I'm an accompanist, as you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a really positive move. I was surprised at the...
Yeah, there was... I think there was a sort of level of hysteria about it that... that was sort of exaggerated. I mean... The issue for us is that if you want to do a flute exam, you have to have an accompanist. And if you happen to live in a country town that doesn't have an accompanist, then what do you do? The sort of dynamics, just like online, has changed. The dynamics of places has changed. And sort of 20, 30 years ago, every country town had a pianist, you know, a woman or man who played for all the exams. And a lot of those people have retired, moved out, moved on. And some places just don't have a pianist. And it's not right for us that you can't do an exam because of that sort of requirement. So hence that after a lot of careful consideration, that idea that maybe up to grade three you could use a recorded accompaniment without too much, you know, damage to your musical progress. Now, we don't have, and, you know, and also a lot of people just find the cost of, you know, preparation for an exam is expensive for some families. Now, we don't make judgments about those things. We don't also have the resources to say, well, whether to make a judgment whether somebody does have access to an accompanist and can afford it or not. You know, we're just saying it's a facility that's there. Obviously, if you got access to a professional accompanist, that's fantastic, and that's always going to be better than playing with a recording. You know, we never tried to say that that wasn't, but keeping kids involved in our examination system is important to us, and hence the recordings. So those recordings are gradually being produced. So each new syllabus has them, and we're sort of working backwards to fit the existing syllabuses. And we have some very long-winded coming back to your question, do we have any apps? We have one app, which is our My Tempo app, and that's an app that allows you to put those recordings into the app. You can change the speed, you can so that you can practice slowly, speed it back up, and do it faster for that matter if you want to. So you can change the speed without changing the pitch. And
you know, My Tempo,
yeah.
We'll pop a link down for that.
So that's our main, up till now, that's been our main little introduction to apps, but we certainly have plans and interest, and, you know, we see all sorts of possibility, and it's just about resources, you know. All these things take time, expensive to produce. And
I know how expensive apps are to produce, unbelievable, yeah. You can sink a lot of money very quickly, and then they update the operating systems and you have to do it all again.
That's right.
Yeah, so, that's it.
Exactly.
Okay, fantastic. So, look, I think we'll wrap it up there. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you feel is important, or have we covered most of the bases?
I think you've been pretty thorough. So
good. That's what I like to hear. All right. So, what's the best website for teachers to go to for more information? Should it be the federal or their local?
Yeah, I think amyb.edu.au, which is the federal website. There's great. All the information's there. If you want more specific examination information, you know, dates of exams, there's links off to the state sites and so on, so you can get to everywhere. So that's a great starting point, I think.
Fantastic. Well, look, Bernard, thanks very much for your time today. It was really, really interesting. Good to talk with you again.
Thanks.
And no doubt I'll see you at some workshops and things.
Thanks for the opportunity, and good luck with all your online ventures. It's good.
Appreciate it. All right.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.